Hello and welcome to Not Just Paleo. I'm your host, Evan Brand. Today is a great day for so many reasons I can't even list them all. One, we have Dr. Joe Mercola on the show, who's been a huge inspiration to me for as long as I can possibly remember. The first time I went to his website, mercola.com, I was blown away, and I'm continually blown away at what he does. He donates proceeds of all the products that he sells to the National Vaccine Information Center, to Food Democracy Now, to Fluoride Action Network, to the Organic Consumers Association, to the Vitamin D Council, the Alliance for Natural Health, and on and on. He's an osteopathic physician. You've probably seen him or heard of him on CNN, ABC, Dr. Oz, Doctors, CBS, NBC, everywhere. He's written many New York Times bestsellers, including The No Grain Diet and his newest one, Effortless Healing. I know he's working on more books. He's got a documentary called The Game Changer. Mercola is just a great guy. If you don't know about him, then you better get on his news list ASAP because he's an incredible guy. Anyhow, today is also the second day of the Adrenal Reset Summit that my friend Dr. Alan Christensen and I are hosting. So if you're listening to this in the future, you can still go to adrenalresetsummit.com and you can sign up with your email there. But right now, this week, the talks are live. So day two, we have about five docs today giving their expert take on adrenal health and what are the most important steps you need to be taking to improve your adrenal health, get rid of your symptoms, you know, insomnia and energy issues, depression, mood symptoms, all that's tied in some aspect to your hormones. So you can sign up for that at adrenalresetsummit.com. We partner with Thrive Market too, so you can get a free jar of coconut oil or a free bottle of avocado oil. Sign up for it. Like I said, if it's in the future, then you can still get access to the events or you can purchase those events in the future as well. You'll get over 30 expert talks and all the transcripts as well. All right. Well, without further ado, let's talk with Dr. Joe Mercola. Enjoy. Dr. Mercola, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Evan.
Yes. Well, I'm glad we could get off of Skype and that you could get your grounding beach walk in while we're doing this podcast.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate and blessed to have the opportunity, you know, to do this. I walk on the beach pretty much every day for the reasons which I'll describe in a few moments. And not only for grounding, but for the photoelectric effect and to improve my mitochondrial biology. But, you know, most people aren't able to do this. But I made this conscious choice to leave Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago, went to kindergarten to postgraduate residency training, all within the city limits. So it's hard to be more of a Chicagoan, native Chicagoan than that. In fact, I went to high school literally 1.5 miles from Wrigley Field and ran by that Wrigley Field pretty much through most of the school year when I was on the cross-country team.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was kind of nice to see that. I don't know if you know that. They had 5 million people at Wrigley to celebrate the Cubs' victory, 108 years of no World Series, and which was the largest gathering of humans ever recorded in the United States and the seventh largest in the world, which is pretty impressive.
That is. I saw the video where people were waiting outside to see the old school announcement that the Cubs won on the little the display outside of the stadium. That was hilarious. It's like pre-smartphone days.
Yep. I know. But anyway, it's a tangent.
Yeah.
But the important thing is I moved down to Florida so I can get exposure to sunshine. And sometimes, and you might, I know you're personally considering yourself, but sometimes we have to do these things. We have to make pretty significant choices and decisions, which may conflict and cause some internal relational conflict with family members. But, you know, it really, there's a lot of good reasons to avoid winter. I mean, there's, right? I don't think humans were optimally designed. Were designed to thrive in the winter. You can survive, but it's hard to thrive.
Amen. That's well said. I mean, I just saw probably one of the last monarch butterflies flying down to Mexico yesterday. I said we were passing a Mexican restaurant, and I thought maybe he heard the music or something. I said, "The monarch, you're headed the wrong way. You turn around, go the other way." So what's changed for you since you've been able to do the beach every day? Like cognitive function, you know, energy levels, optimism, things like that.
Good question, but I don't know that I can identify any specific results from that because I do so many things at once.
Right.
And one of the big things I'm doing now is experimenting with nutritional ketosis to optimize, first of all, to get my body to burn fat as its primary fuel, which I had never done until late last year because I was burning carbs like everyone else as my primary fuel and got me in troubles. I didn't understand it. I had been connected with Mark Sisson, maybe 5-6 years ago, and he got me intrigued with the concept, but it never really hit home until I read the book Tripping Over the Truth by Travis Christofferson, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer. Because when I walk on the beach, I'm multitasking because I can walk for 1 to 3 hours typically. And so last year I read 150 books, and this was the best book I read last year, and it really motivated me to integrate nutritional ketosis into my regimen. And I'm obsessive compulsive, so turned into a biohacker, and I got a 24-hour glucose monitor that I wear. It tells me my glucose reading every 5 minutes, so I can play with it and modulate it. But I integrate that the photobiology, which I was recently, when I was exposed through Ben Greenfield to Jack Cruz's work, who I understand you just interviewed, and really forward thinker and helped me more fully appreciate and understand light and the importance and how it actually is an important fuel for you. Because when we eat, most people don't realize this, probably even your audience, that one of the primary reasons for eating is for fuel, of course. But how do we get that fuel? Well, it's ultimately, whether it's carbs or fat, pretty much breaks down to electrons, passes through the electron transport chain in the mitochondria, and then generates ATP. But here's the fact that most people don't understand or appreciate, is that when you expose your skin to full-spectrum natural sunlight, primarily the near-infrared, it essentially charges the water in your the batteries that's present in your water and forms structured water, or easy water, as Gerald Pollack would refer to it as, and essentially provides energy to run your whole system. Because the heart, and Tom Cowan, C-O-W-A-N, great book he just wrote, just recently, The Cosmic Heart.
Yeah, Cowan just came on about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he's a friend, and he talked about strophanthus as a way. He's got some really novel thoughts, and if you haven't listened to it ever, you got to listen to it because it's just great. And read his book. I read the book, his book on one beach walk, so I mean, it's a pretty easy read. And it's great, but if you've been exposed to what he's teaching, is that the heart in no way, shape, or form can physically pump your blood throughout your body, because it's like, I think if you string the blood vessels together, it'll go 3 times around the earth. So it just doesn't have enough force to do that. It basically functions as a hydraulic ram, which is an important and necessary function, but the actual energy to pump your blood comes from structured water.
Wow.
So you got to charge up your water with infrared. That's just one of the reasons why daily sunlight exposure, not through a window, doesn't work. And it has to be on your skin. Well, it doesn't have to be, because infrared does penetrate some clothing. But it's better to be on your skin, because then you get the ultraviolet, which is also beneficial for vitamin D and other components.
Well, tell us about your office, because you moved your office for this very reason.
Well, no, I moved my home. Like you, I basically run things virtually. So there is no one in my company that lives even within a few hundred miles of me. So my primary office is still in Chicago, and we have we've opened up a Florida office for administrative executives on the west coast of Florida.
No, I mean actual office, though, out where you said you were in front of the big
window.
Oh, my
personal office.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, that... I had a really nice office. In fact, it just had a nice big security window put in. It was 7-8 feet by 12 feet. It was a huge window, lots of good light, but it's still coming through a window. And when you have sunlight coming through a window, that's less than optimal, because the CRI, the color rendition index of pure natural sunlight, is 100. And interestingly, an incandescent bulb, either halogen or regular traditional incandescent, is about 99, pretty close to sunlight. But the CRI of sunlight through a window is in the 80s, low 80s. So you're missing a lot of good wavelengths it's going to help your biology thrive. So as a result of that, and studying Alexander Wunsch, that's W-U-N-S-C-H, who Cruz loves this guy. He's an MD out of Germany and has devoted the last two or three decades to studying this topic, and is really a world-class expert in photobiology. But after reading and listening to his materials, it became really clear that I wanted to expose my retina to natural sunlight many hours a day, not just go and walk on the beach for an hour to 3 hours and then stay inside the rest of the day. I wanted to be outside. So I shifted my office, where I do most of my work, standing up, of course, into my garage. I just open up the garage door and I have this magnificent sunlight streaming through with no windows. So it's great.
Well, that's such a simple fix, too, but the effects are going to be huge.
Yeah, a lot of times life, simple things, you have to learn how to improvise. So, like, we all know that sitting down excessively, I'm sure your audience is key to that. I mean, when I was sitting down 16 hours a day, I had profoundly debilitating back pain and visited dozens of clinicians and tried many different types of exercise routines and stretches to address it with no improvement until I realized I was sitting down too much was the cause. My interest in that disappeared. But so one of my strategies, and this is an example, is that we all travel, I'm sure you do too, and you have to go to the hotel room. Well, how are you going to do your work in a hotel room? Because all you got is a desk, a sitting desk, right? Well, you take that sitting desk, or they almost always have a waste paper basket. You turn it upside down and put it on the dresser, and you've got a standing desk.
Yep. Piece of cake.
Simple solutions. Don't cost anything, yet can have profound improvements in the way you approach life.
I'll have to hook you up with this guy, Luke. He did a giant Kickstarter for a company called StandStand, and they build little bamboo standing desks that I'm actually using right now, and it can fit in your backpack. It's just three little pieces of wood, and it makes like a little X, and you can put your laptop right on it. I think you would love something.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
That.
I would like to look at it. But I take a lot of stuff with me when I travel. Literally, I almost have to have almost 50 pounds of stuff just for not any of it being clothes. It's my food and things like BYOB, bring your own bulbs, you know, which we'll talk about in a moment because we'll talk next about the dangers of LED lighting. But I'm so convinced that I actually bring incandescent bulbs with me and swap them out when I get to the hotel room. Even Ben Greenfield doesn't do this yet, but he will once he understands this.
I totally hear you. Where do you even find incandescent bulbs? I thought they were getting phased out and they were becoming almost illegal.
Yeah, they were banned thanks to, I think, George W. Bush. Now it's finally being implemented. It's you can't find them unless you go for like $4 bulbs on Amazon. But right now you can still get them. You have to search really hard. They probably won't be available for much longer, but on eBay. I picked up about 500 of them because who knows when we'll be able to.
Yeah. So that's incredible.
Because now they're $1 a bulb. You might always be able to buy them because of some loophole they have, but it might cost you $4 or $5.
Right.
And they're crazy because they're almost all planned obsolescence. These bulbs will only last 1,000 hours by design. So unlike the other bulbs, because they can make them incandescent bulbs that last 100 years. They've got bulbs running over 100 years right now, but they choose not to because of the economics.
I agree. I know. Yeah, there's a bulb. What is it in? I think it's in like a New York City fire station, one of the original incandescents.
Yes, that's the one. I think that might be 110 years.
Yep, that's incredible. So what made you make the switch? Was this after chatting with Cruz, or when did you say, okay, I'm getting rid of LEDs, or did you ever have LEDs and then had to go back to incandescents?
No, I did chat with Cruz once on one of his calls because I have a member in his group, and I had an opportunity to do that. And he reminded me during that conversation that, oh, yeah, you've interviewed Alexander Wunsch before. And I said, oh, yeah, I have. Listen, he's an interesting guy. He's got a really thick German accent, so he's not really dynamic, but he is obviously world-class knowledge. So I said, let me interview him again. So I'd interviewed him recently, and it was actually, if you search my site, or you just search Google, type in Mercola, dangers of LED, and it'll come right up. And we talked for over an hour. It's like 15 pages of information and details, which it goes into all, because I can only touch on this, what we did in an hour. But essentially, LEDs are unnatural lights. They're digital, obviously, and they're non-thermal. What does that mean? It means that when we get sunlight, it's a thermal light source because the sun is burning at about 6,500 degrees Kelvin. Incandescent bulb burns a tungsten filament, and that's typically around 2,700 degrees Kelvin. And halogens are also incandescents, and this is a thermal light source, which is relatively healthy. And the wavelengths of these are such that they really closely represent the full spectrum. It's an analog light source. Not only is it thermal, but it's analog. Whereas the LED and the fluorescent are digital. Bad news. And they don't have a complete full spectrum. They have these peaks. They have actually relatively few wavelengths. And the wavelengths they do, that most of these bulbs do, are in a relatively dangerous ranges. Now, what does that mean? It means, and we all know this, this is like no undisputable. Blue light at night is dangerous. Everyone gets that. We've got night shift on iOS. We've got blue light filters on Android. And, you know, we're talking about, a lot of people are aware of blocking blue light with glasses at night. That they don't understand, what they fail to understand, is that excessive blue light from artificial sources is dangerous any time of the day. Any time of the day. So, and Ben's got to get upgraded on this too, because he really needs to integrate this, because he's got a big part of it, but he doesn't have this full picture.
Well, so I remember...
Go ahead. All right. Well, blue light is important. You need some blue light exposure, no question. But ideally, it's from the sun in the morning. And what that does is it generates reactive oxygen species in the retina, which ultimately catalyzes or stimulates the production of melatonin at night if you don't have any light exposure. But here's the issue. If you have unopposed blue light, like we do with these digital light sources, then you will not have the repair and recovery phase, which is stimulated by the infrared, specifically the near-infrared exposures from sunlight. People don't understand this. 40% of the wavelengths in the sunlight is infrared. There are infrared. So it's a massively important nutrient. We just don't need it for ultraviolet B to generate vitamin D. We need it to fuel our biology. So when you get those reactive oxygen species generated blue light, then you have the repair and recover, which is normal. It's what your body's designed to do. Reactive oxygen species are not necessarily dangerous. In the right quantities, they're absolutely essential for optimal human health. And when you unnecessarily suppress them with supplemental antioxidants, you can actually cause a lot of complications. So the best antioxidant for blue light exposure is infrared light. So, in fact, I just wrote an article. I think it'll be out this week or next, coming soon, where we talk about, it's a lead article, I think it's next Thursday, the dangers that a lot of people have on night shift workers. So I developed a whole protocol that people can use if for whatever reason you have to be working the night shift. So, some people are like that. They just have no choice at that time in their life. They've got to work. So this, I devised a strategy that actually sent through, and Dr. Wunsch signed off on. He thought it was a good one, so that would at least minimize the side effects of doing that.
Well, I'll tell you, McCullough, what destroyed my health was I worked night shift. I worked at UPS to pay for my college.
Oh, my gosh.
It destroyed me, and I was under very, very, very blue fluorescent lighting in a UPS warehouse moving 100-pound packages at 3 a.m. Talk about the opposite of biology.
Yeah, you couldn't almost design a worse biological health environment.
Well, you know,
that is just terrible.
Something to notice too, and I'm not sure if you wrote about that, but I saw an incredible amount of morbidly obese people. So there's a huge effect. There's got to be some insulin stuff going on with this blue light at night. Just all sorts of things. Brain glucose. Who knows what all is going on?
Well, your circadian rhythm is screwed up on steroids. There's a multitude of chronobiological pathways that are also messed up because your organs were designed to thrive and operate in certain rhythms. And you're violating all these fundamental laws of nature when you do that. You see, the only light we've ever had prior to Edison figuring this thing out was thermal analog lights, candles, fireplaces, you know, or fires. And that is actually a pretty healthy light. That's actually even better than the incandescent. It's pretty close. Incandescent burns at about 2,700 degrees Kelvin, and a candle will burn at about 1,900. So if you really want the ultimate light at night, it's a candle. Next best would be an incandescent.
Yep. Do you use candles? Do you have a? I guess you wouldn't even need a fireplace down in Florida, though.
No. I'm not a big fan of fireplaces for a variety of reasons, primary pollution.
Yeah.
But I use specific candles that have lead-free wicks and burn a very pure oil, like a purified soybean oil, non-GMO. So that's what I burn.
That's cool.
And it is pretty nice. And it's romantic. And so one of the other dangers that you have to be careful of are other exposures other than the light. Well, they're a type of light. We may not realize it, but they are, and that is our devices, which include our cell phone, which is a minimal one because it's a small surface area. More importantly, our monitor, which was killing me. If I had a 55-inch 4K LED monitor, which I used for my computer screen, blasting me with all this blue light LED.
A 55-inch.
And standing off. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
so like
I saw
a foot away from it all day.
Yeah, like your day in the life video. I think you were using that screen in that video.
Absolutely. So that's an exposure. And then for most people, they're going to watch TV at night, the worst time to watch it. But you know, for convenience, most of the time, the time that most of us watch it at, including me. So all those screens need to be remediated. And the way the best to remediate it is to put some type of filter on it, where at least you're filtering out the blue light. Now, the simplest way is to wear your blue light glasses, especially at night. When it's sunset, I put my glasses on for the most part, unless I absolutely have to see something I need a lot of visual acuity, because your visual acuity will go down when you're filtering out the blue at night, no question.
Yeah.
But then when you're wearing them, then you don't have to worry about these LED lights as much. Now, still not the ideal biological source of light at night, because it's not analog, and you can filter out the blue peaks, but you're still getting this non-healthy component. And then the other issue is illumination, which is why with an incandescent, it still can be pretty bright, and candles are not bright. You know, that's about the right intensity that you want. You don't want a lot of light at night. You just don't.
Yeah. Now,
that's a good way. Now, Ben talked about this, and he totally clued me into this guy. His name is Daniel. He's a 20-year-old genius Bulgarian hacker that put together a program called IRIS, IRIS, which is the bomb. That thing blows away efflux. There's no comparison. It is just so great. But the only problem is it's really expensive. It costs $2.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious? I saw IRIS. Yeah. I just haven't installed it yet because the website was kind of weird.
It is weird. He doesn't understand. He's not a graphical user interface design expert, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But once you get it and understand how it works, and he'll respond to emails, it's just incredible. It's really beautiful.
Now, something I talk with Cruz about, and I'm not an expert enough on this to even speak on it probably, but is the effect of the light sources on your skin. And he's kind of said to me, Evan, mm-hmm. even if you block blue light with the glasses, if you're still, you know, shirtless in front of the monitor, you're still getting the skin exposure there due to the photoreceptors on the skin. So do you try to...
Okay, no, it's a good concern. I heard him say that too. And to the best of my knowledge, he has no evidence to support that, at least from a study. Now, that doesn't mean it's not true. But I ran up by Alexander Wunsch, and he wasn't aware of any research on it.
Okay, so the eyes are the biggest.
The eyes are the biggest. There's no question that's the main one. That is the main one. So you could wear a shirt, too, especially if it's winter, then you're not going to get these exposures. But, yeah, just cover your skin because, I mean, most of the blue light does not penetrate very deeply at all, so your clothing will clearly easily mask it. The red and infrared tends to penetrate.
Right. So let's go back to infrared.
Longer wavelength.
Let's talk about the infrared for a minute. So we talked about you can survive in winter, but you can't thrive in winter in a place where you're going to have like a vitamin D winter and you just can't get any good exposure. Mm-hmm. Could you supplement by using, say, an infrared sauna? Would that supplement some of the same benefits that you could get from the sun, or is it just completely different infrared?
No, it's pretty. That's probably the best strategy. And I actually personally use a full spectrum, no EMF LED sauna every day with my head out of it. It's like these tent saunas.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to be careful because most infrared saunas are not full spectrum. And they just have the far infrared. Those carbon panels, for the most part, only make far. You need some other strategy to create near infrared, which is most biologically important. The far infrared is good for detoxing, but not for biological health. It doesn't make it worse. It just doesn't. It doesn't recharge your battery like the near infrared does.
That makes sense. So, did you have the big cedar or hemlock box saunas before, and then you switched
I did. In fact, we made it in our company, and I got rid of them. And we're switching over to these other ones because I think they're much healthier, much less expensive. These things cost under $1,000, so they're and if you live in like a very small house, you can fold them up if you need to and throw them under your bed. They're really convenient from that perspective. They don't take up a lot of space. Wow. Just plug in a regular out wall outlet. So I like them. I think they're a really important strategy. And as you do infrared sauna, it ideally should be done in the morning, which is a little more helpful biologically. And then what I do, I have the luxury of having a swimming pool. So even if Florida gets kind of cold in the winter, I think we're down in the mid-60s now, or maybe high 60s. So I dumped in the pool in the morning. I do my sauna, that I do half a dozen laps in the pool. And do cold, my version of cold thermogenesis.
That's excellent. I was going to ask, are you doing it? Are you heating your pool, or you let your pool get cold?
Oh, no. Gosh, no. What an extravagant waste of energy to heat your pool.
Yeah.
I mean, Yeah, I think it's crazy. So I'm looking forward to last year I had some health challenges where I couldn't really do it, but this year I'm looking forward to try to get down into the 50s and do the few laps.
Sure.
Cold. I don't know. Have you done CT in a cold water pool?
I've done some cold plunges. I mean, there's definitely some sources of water around here. I think that's where I picked up parasites, to be honest with you, swimming in cold springs. But I've done some of it, and it's brutal. It's tough.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they try to not show a face when they get into it, but I definitely grimaced at first.
I think you build up a tolerance to it. And I'm inspired by Wim Hof, who's I was supposed to meet him when I went up to longevity, but we lectured at the same time, but our schedules didn't collide.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you interview Wim?
I haven't yet, because I don't know why I haven't. I just haven't done it yet. But he's certainly getting a lot of credence in the even in the scientific community, and he's a real inspiration. I mean, you know, before you dive in, you just think of Wim.
Oh,
okay, I can do it. There's nothing compared to what he does.
Yeah, I know. Talk us about your, can we call it a super fruit? Is that a genuine name for the fruit you were telling me about that you're eating while walking?
I'm actually eating it right now. I live in Florida, so I can grow these trees. It really is a subtropical fruit. It's called the Barbados cherry. Most people haven't heard of that term, but they've heard of, if you're nutritionally astute, you've heard of the term acerola cherry. And you've connected it with vitamin C because it's one of the highest concentrations of vitamin C in any known food in the world. And these berries are about the size of not a grape, maybe a big grape, maybe a little smaller than a big grape. And they have 80 milligrams of vitamin C, and they taste great. I mean, they're not like a Bing cherry sweet. They're not sour. It's just a different flavor. And so I've been able to harvest. I mean, it takes a few years from the grow to the point where you can harvest. But this year, I mean, I've harvested from April, and that as we're recording this, it's mid-November or the beginning of November. And there's still plenty of blooms on the tree, so I think I'm going to be harvesting these cherries into December. So there's... It's one of the only fruits that I know of that you can harvest for like 8 months. It's like crazy.
Now, so I guess, did you plant those when they were they already a couple years old when you planted them, and then you just had to wait a couple more years?
Yes. Yeah, I think it was like 3 years, maybe three or four years before they started being highly prolific. And regenerative agriculture is one of my other passions. I live in, and I just purchased a vacant lot next to me, which is almost a, a full acre. I think it is a full acre. So it's a really long-term project, but I'm hoping to make that a magnificent garden/farm. and actually start supplying my local health food stores with these really biodynamically, organically grown local vegetables for them. So
that's great. Well, you got me into doing microgreens too. Are you still doing indoor?
Oh yeah,
indoor
absolutely.
Greens?
Yeah. Yes, I do. The microgreens is really, for my version, is just sunflower seed sprouts. So I've actually been doing those ever since I first learned about them when I went down to Hippocrates Institute in West Palm Beach, Florida, where, you know, they've been promoting this for many, many decades.
Have you done the broccoli, or do you like the sunflower the best?
No, broccoli is really pretty bitter. And it's not much of a volume-wise. I mean, you probably only have a few tablespoons of broccoli sprouts. Whereas with sunflower seed sprouts, you're looking at at least a few cups, you know. And they're really, you can buy them. I've seen them available in Whole Foods before. But they were like $30 a pound, you know.
Yeah.
Like $70 for 4 ounces. So you grow them yourself for about 25 cents, which is crazy.
I know. Yeah, so,
you can't be much fresher than yourself. You know, I mean, growing them yourself. It takes a little effort, but not much. I mean, literally, once you get it down, I would say to get a tray to harvest probably takes you less than 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes. That includes the watering, the planting, and everything.
Now, did you try the jars before and then you found the trays to be better? Like the
sprouting
jars?
Well, I did. Like most people, yeah, when you use jars, it's probably pretty much everything else. But if you want to grow a food source, then you really have to plant it. And there's a lot of, I'm not a big fan of hydroponics. In fact, there's a push. Cornucopia just is going to do a big thing. The hydroponic people want to make and classify them as organic, which is ridiculous because it's not organic. You need the healthy soil microbiome to optimize plant health. You just can't throw in a few minerals and think, it's like the people do with supplements, take a few magic pills and you're going to be healthy. That's not the case at all. That's like a digital versus an analog approach. You need an analog approach where you're getting the full spectrum of the nutrients that we know of, but also, more importantly, and probably more likely in numbers, the ones that we don't know about,
exactly.
Especially when you get into the quantum biology.
Exactly. So what are you planting in? I know you've talked about this on your site, but since I got you here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the key. Great healthy soil, and I live close to a river, and actually just like about a half a mile from the ocean, so most of my soil is sand. It's not very good. It's good for drainage, but it's not good for growing food. So you have to put biomass in there, and I found a really local tree contractor who actually, as we're doing this talk, he's dropping the 15,000 pounds of wood chips on my new piece of property. I'm going to probably need 300 to 500 truckloads of those to do this. But you need this biomass. And it takes about 2 to 3 years for the chips to convert to really this thick, dark, rich humus that supports all these microbiomes. Initially, it's not that good for supporting food growth because it sucks up nitrogen from the soil. But after you get but it also encourages the growth of these mycelial fungi. And those start to eventually supply the nitrogen, and everything balances out after a while. But you can augment it with other sources of carbon, like biochar, which is like a miracle, and also mushroom compost. And then you can put in your waste material, like manures, or even human waste, like human urine you can put in there. It's a good source of nitrogen to balance things out. And then I use topically or on a foliar application, we use these ionically extracted minerals from the ocean that are really almost nothing short of magical. I mean, they just, even in good soil, I mean, it's just amazing what they do because they really have almost every single element that they need. And a lot of times there's these bizarre micronutrients that there's the bottleneck for maximum growth. So this sort of optimizes plant growth. And we actually have them on our site, Ionic Ocean Minerals. They're sort of a hidden gem that few people are aware of.
I've seen that.
And
now,
are
you spraying that on everything in your backyard?
Yeah, well, every edible. I converted my entire landscape about 4 years ago when I moved down here from ornamental to edible, which is a major product. It's almost all done now. I mean, I've got right now, and this is before I expanded my new space, I got 60 fruit trees. I have like a dozen mangoes. that I'm actually that are producing these cherry trees is my favorite. Peaches, plums, what else? Figs, oranges, of course, citrus. I got tangerines. So it's like 60 fruit trees.
Can you do limes and lemons?
I have a limes. My limes haven't done too well because I actually used an inferior version of these ionic minerals that had too much sodium in it, and it kind of decimated the growth. So I haven't actually had any fruit from them for a while. They're still recovering.
What about avocados?
But I've got, for some reason, I haven't figured that one out yet. I've got like half a dozen avocado trees, but I still haven't harvested any yet. So I'm still trying to tweak that. But yeah, avocados. I go through 2 or 3 avocados a day. And as we're recording this, the price of my health food store, avocados are $4 a piece. But even at the regular Publix grocery store, it's like $2, which is pretty pricey.
Yeah, I've heard there's a bunch of stuff going on in Mexico. And then with the drought in California, it seems like they're almost a rare commodity now. They're the next gold food, I guess.
Yeah. So that's why I grow my own.
That's incredible. So when you get this other piece of land, are you going to put? Did you mention livestock? You say you're going to put some animals on there too, like some chickens?
No animals.
Okay.
No, I mean it's interesting. I just don't have the time for it.
Yeah.
But no, it's going to be plants. You know, basically farm/garden.
Yeah. So this you were talking about this mushroom. What did you call it? Is it a mushroom compost?
Yeah, mushroom compost. You could buy it commercially. It's really good. You could actually use it also to inoculate the wood chips.
Oh, okay.
Because ultimately, the fungal growth that's massively supported by the wood chips that breaks the wood chips down. That's what they produce the enzymes that digest the cellulose and lignins in the wood fibers. Because bacteria won't do that. But once you do that, you create this incredible matrix that it just supports this phenomenally important healthy microbiome in the soil, which then supports the plant growth.
That makes sense. Okay. So people definitely, they can't go straight into throwing down wood chips and planting. You've got to do some more work before you can get it ready to be planted.
You could, but you'll be seriously disappointed.
Really?
Now, you could still use maybe 2 to 3 inches of use the chips as a mulch to cover them, but you have to plant it in good soil, like maybe mushroom compost. It would be great. But if you want to create soil from scratch, like I'm doing with this property, then you need lots of biomass. And usually wood chips are the most cost-effective way to do that, because I actually get mine delivered for like $20 a load, which is crazy, for 15,000 pounds of biomass.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's cheaper than dirt.
I wonder what are those wood chips? I mean, what are they cutting down in Florida? Is it palms, or what kind of trees are you getting on one?
Yeah, where's the source of these wood chips? So as we're recording this, it's literally just a little over a month, maybe 5 weeks after Hurricane Matthew hit us. So we got hit really hard. In fact, 3 miles north of me, the complete highway on the ocean went into the ocean. It's called A1A, just by Flagler. It's gone. So we have a lot. I mean, it looked like a war zone. Still does in some areas. I mean, literally, there's so much down oak trees and everything. So a lot of the sources are coming from that. But prior to that, I mean, people need trimmings done. And, you know, basically trimming their trees. So that generates a lot of it. And then sometimes they have to take them down for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So that's the source.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what did you do? Did you have to shelter in place, or did you have to go somewhere else?
Oh, no, I've got this massively effective hurricane shelter that's literally 1 foot thick walls of concrete, 5,000 pounds per square inch, and like a 3,000-pound safe door that I can get into. I mean, I literally could survive a Cat 7 tornado, and it's totally waterproof and toxin-proof. Actually, so it's a fallout shelter, essentially. So, I mean, I could go through a 100-foot tsunami and I'd be fine.
Wow. What would you do for, for toxins? I guess since we went on this tangent, you put like some type of air purification in it, or how do you do that part?
Yeah, it's got Tesla grade bioweapons warfare type of filtration system. So,
That's
It's all
excellent.
integrated into the whole room, yeah.
That's excellent. Awesome. Well, I know I got to let you go soon. I think this has been a really fun overview of some other pieces to this puzzle that people should be knowing about. Is there anything else you had on top of your mind, you know, with this whole grounding and sunlight and the LED bulbs? I think we did a good job, but in case there were something else that we didn't mention, let's
Well,
do it.
yeah, I just to fine tune the issue with the grounding and the sunlight. The other part of the equation that Cruz helped me understand was that the DHA is an essential fat for this process to occur, and it's one of the few fats that aren't metabolized or broken down and used for fuel. When you eat them, instead is stored, because it's such a precious commodity, into your cellular and mitochondrial membranes. So the DHA actually has this 22 carbon pi electron cloud that can serve as a solar collector for the radiation. So when I walk, and I'm still walking on the beach, I'm walking, I'm grounded, the wave just went over my feet, so I'm walking in water, and I'm totally, you can't, it's really, I'm not aware of a more potent ground that you can have than you're on the beach in the water. I mean, you are totally grounded to the earth. So you got this. What does that mean? It means you have a source of negative electrons, because the earth is a ground. So when you're walking with minimal clothes on, then in the sunny out, the photons from the sun are positive. So if you're in the middle, you've got this powerful biological circuit that will refuel and recharge your water, turn it into structured water that your body can use all day, and then give off energy at night when you're sleeping. You have none of this type of exposure when you need it, when you're rest and repair. So it's an important thing to consider, and maybe, I know it may sound too ethereal or impractical, but if you were intrigued by the idea, it's something that many people may not be able to do now, but who knows? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, you can look forward to it and plan it so that you can regularly engage in this type of activity. Because I think the challenge is to be as healthy as you can now to optimize your biology so that we can take advantage of advances in technology, which will likely occur in the next 20, 30 years, which will radically address the fundamental causes of aging. We don't have any solution for aging right now. Nothing. The only thing we can do is increase the health span. We cannot increase the lifespan. Nothing has been shown to increase the lifespan in humans. We have no solution. So I don't think that's going to be a permanent state, though. And I could be wrong. I mean, I'm convinced it will be resolved at some point, but it may not be for a few hundred years, but it could be in the next few decades. We'll have some really initial tools to start reversing some of this aging. And then, you know, we'll increase the lifespan from 120 to maybe 150, 170, 200, who knows? Because if you can actually repair the damage that's been done to you earlier, then you could, just like a car, and Aubrey de Grey uses this analogy a lot, to repair the damage and restore to its pristine or sometimes even better condition. So that's an interesting way, interesting consideration. And you'll only be able to take advantage of this if you're healthy, which is, you know, getting in the sunshine on a regular basis is one of the most powerful ways you can do it, and of course, eating a good diet.
That's very true. So now you mentioned about, like, you and I were chatting off air. You put on some aloe before you go in the sunshine. Is that
Oh,
sort of
yeah.
a daily practice there? What other things would people need to do if they're trying to go get sun exposure and they're a Irish person or other, you know, light skin?
Well, I think the iris, I mean, that's a simple thing. Anyone listening to this should be on iris. I mean, there's just no excuse not to be. It's an important part of the way that you're, oh, darn, what did I do with this? Oh, I found it. Okay. You know, so aloe is, I grow the aloe. So, and I actually eat the aloe too. It has a lot of beneficial effects. In fact, some people promote it as a very potent anti-cancer immune stimulant and gut repair. So try to have at least an aloe leaf a day orally. But with respect to other things, it's just use common sense when you're in the sun. You never, never, never want to get sunburned, because that's you know, dangerous. So I live in Florida, so in that, and I'm relatively dark, so I could tolerate that. But what I've learned is that in the summer, I stay away from solar noon. I get my light exposure in the morning, like typically 3 or 4 hours away from solar noon. But as we're entering the middle of winter, which is December 21st, I'm moving closer to solar noon, and because I, you know, the frequencies aren't as potent because of the tilt of the Earth.
Makes sense. So you're not out at, you know, say noon, in July.
No. I try to go out the earlier better. You know, I mean, geez, it's like 5 o'clock. It's like sunny. I mean, sunrise. So
I wonder,
try to get out somewhere about 7 or 8. You know, if I can.
I was gonna say, so with the spectrum and the inclination of the sun and all of that, can you still synthesize vitamin D really early like that? I mean, if you're at sunrise time, but it's summer, are you making vitamin D yet, or does it have to cross that certain angle first in the sky before you can start making vitamin D?
Great question. I have not swallowed oral vitamin D for about 7 years, and my levels are routinely about 70 nanograms per milliliter, which is really good. So it works for me. There's enough, because I live in Florida, so there's enough sunshine here, even early in the day, UVB, to do that. I mean, I'll still be out regularly sometimes of the day. I mean, enough. You don't need much exposure during that time of the year.
Right. What is it like, really, what, 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah. Maybe give you 10, 20,000 units. So that's all you need.
That's incredible.
So, and
is it kind of a myth then about the skin? Because I've heard some say, as your skin ages, the conversion process is less efficient.
Oh no. Well, here's a key term the adjective that wasn't mentioned in ages. If it's biologically ages, so there's a difference between a healthy 60-year-old and an unhealthy 30-year-old. So that 30-year-old might not be able to convert as much and effectively as a 60-year-old, based on their biology. So you have to look at the whole picture. So, but anyway, you know, for most, it's a mood issue for most people in the North, because they're not going to, pretty much at this time of the year, November, oh my gosh, they've long passed the state where they could be naked outside all day long in the sunshine and not make any vitamin D. It's just not enough UVB radiation coming through.
Yep. So your friends back in Chicago, they're going into their slumber at
this
time.
Yeah, you know, and the other, I mean, Chicago is definitely falls in the category, but in addition to not, you know, to being colder and more dismal, it's more dismal. And there's many other country that have this problem. I mean, it get cloudy for weeks at a time. I mean, it's in Florida, it's like rarely ever cloudy for a day. I mean, it's usually maybe a few hours, sunny the rest of the day.
Wow.
This is crazy.
Yeah, you're making me want to move down there for sure. I mean, I definitely notice here in Kentucky, I mean, the Ohio Valley, you could have 3 weeks, like you said. You could have 3 weeks of not seeing the sun, and it's not even cloudy.
Oh, yes.
You can't even call it cloudy. It's so overcast that you can't even see anything. It's just a dark, it's not a cloud, it's a wall. It's a wall of gray over your head. And it definitely gets to
me. Yeah, and it should. I mean, there's a lot of studies and science that supports that those types of environments do not allow people to thrive, which is why I think really one of the best decisions ever made was to move down to Florida and just really engage in this, especially now. I mean, it's a little challenging in the summer, but, you know, you go out on a date in the morning, it's still pretty pleasant, and I like to be in the ocean pretty much every day. So
I hear you. Well,
it's a great combination.
Well, I'm in this lease now till this time next year, so what should I do in the meantime? Come down there and hang in Florida for a month and try to charge up?
Yeah, I would do some research. As we were talking about earlier, I'm not a big fan of urban density, so I live in an area which doesn't have much urban density. There's really no rush hours for the most part. That has some downsides because you don't have access to all these big stores and stuff, but to me that's more than worth it.
Right.
So, but the climate is pretty much good most in Florida. North Florida is a little bit of a challenge. I think it's a little bit colder than I would like. It's about 36 degrees colder than Central Florida. And another 4 or 5 degrees to go to South Florida. But South Florida has its complications. I'm not a big fan of South Florida because of the urban density.
Right, yeah. Yeah, not much room to breathe, and the air is not as clean, I'm sure, down there towards Miami.
Yeah, and then Jack Cruz would support that, too. He's really engrossed with this concept of non-native EMF exposures. And when you get in a big urban density, that's you have that on steroids. So
Yep. Have
You
you
have less
done
EMF.
an antenna search for your area?
I haven't. I can see where mine is. Mine's literally about a mile and a half away. It's across the river. It's pretty big. It's my Verizon cell tower, so.
Ah, okay. Okay. Now, Wi-Fi, things like
But
that, do you turn off Wi-Fi at night?
absolutely. It's the last thing I do before I go to bed is turn off my Wi-Fi.
You know, something
That's
that's
a good
interesting,
strategy.
something I did, I don't know if you've done this or if you've thought about this, but I checked my Wi-Fi router settings, and there's a power output setting. Like when you go, like sometimes you have to go to like 192.168.1.1, or if it's a Linksys router or whatever, but you go to like your online portal for your router settings where you'd set your password, and every brand should have a power output setting, and it's default to 100, where you could be, you know, at the end of your
Oh, interesting.
driveway and still pick up your Wi-Fi, and I turned that down from 100 to 1. So if I like step outside the front
Wow.
door, the signal's gone.
Yeah. I must be low on as a default because I can't. I literally, the front of my house, or I just got a big house. I don't know which one. As soon as I go towards the front, it's gone.
Yeah, it could be a combination, but you could check it out when you remember to look at your Wi-Fi power output and see
Yeah,
what
I
you're
will.
set
That's a
to.
good tip.
Yeah.
Good tip. Yeah, but here's the other thing too, especially like when you travel in your hotels or like you live in an urban area, you can take care of your own, but you can't take care of your neighbors since your neighbors are the one that's messing you up big time. Even the smart meters. You don't have a smart meter, but every one of your neighbors does and bombarding you with the same darn radiation.
I know. I was going to ask you about that. What else was in your travel bag when you go traveling to places? Because, you know, sometimes you'll go in a hotel or wherever you're staying and you'll pop up 50 Wi-Fis, and I'm definitely more sensitive than some people to it. I mean, I feel like I don't cycle through all the stages of sleep and I wake up not feeling rested. That's how I know I've been exposed to something. But now, I take my 10 MARS unit with me, which it's a tri-axial magnetic field meter. I take that with me. There's also another one. It's called an HF35C that measures smart meters and Wi-Fi and microwave radiation, but I'm mainly focused on the
Oh, why don't
magnetic
you
fields.
send me the links for that? I'd like to look at.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I got a guy too that I could connect you with who he's kind of the expert who helped me to figure out what was going on at my house and told me, look, you got to move because no amount of shielding and shelter in place is going to be able to mitigate the amount of fields I was exposed to. So he was like, you just got to go.
Yeah, well, it's a good justification to move to
Yeah,
Florida.
I know. I hear you. Well, the population's going to increase after people hear this. They're going to be like, I'm coming down there. So,
Well, for good reasons too. And then what the other reason I never even mentioned is I don't know the tax rate in Kentucky, but I know that in Illinois it's close to 5%, and the tax rate in Florida is zero, state tax,
I
which is pretty
know.
darn good.
I know. I know. You can't
Yeah, so I
complain.
mean it sort of compensates for some of the other challenges you might have in the move and can sort of subsidize some of the move costs for you, at least over the long run.
Totally, totally. Well, did you see Elon Musk solar roof? I know there's some EMF issues
Oh,
with
I did. Yeah,
solar,
yeah.
so.
But the phone, it's kind of like vaporware, though, because there's no details on when it's going to be available, what the pricing is. And Hurricane Matthew actually was a stress test for my roof and showed me that, unfortunately, the house I bought, they violated code and didn't install it properly. So I have to have the whole roof taken down and put back up. I was contemplating using that, but it's possible, but we have no idea what it's going to cost. It may not be available for 2 or 3 more years. I mean, it was an intriguing concept. And those panels are essentially destruction proof. I mean, you can drop them heavy bowling balls on them and they didn't break.
I know, I know. It's incredible. Some of the guys I've talked with about doing solar, they just say that the converters that you'll use, because apparently the solar panels themselves will come in as DC, but then when you have to convert it to AC, that's where you create massive EMF. So that's kind of the thing
Yeah,
that.
but that is, and I've got 15 kilowatts of solar panels. So I basically my car, which is a Tesla, and the everything that I run on, I don't pay a penny for solar, other than the cost to not have the smart meter and then the monthly utility bill. But even with that, I generated more than enough power to pay those costs.
That's excellent. So how many panels is that you have to have for that amount of power?
Let's see. Well, 10 kilowatts is 40 panels, and then so it's 60.
About 60 panels, okay.
Yeah,
Now
they're about
the
250 watts a panel.
so
Yeah.
those are on the roof or those are just out on little
No, those are on the roof.
Okay.
No, those on the roof. And I actually built an awning for one set of them because I ran out of roof space. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's incredible. So you never have an issue with power then?
No, in Hurricane Matthew, I had power the whole thing. Our whole community was out without 1 week, and I had power the whole time.
That is incredible. So you have that power
Well,
wall.
that's because I have a power wall equivalent. I have created my own. I have 40 kilowatts of lithium ion iron, not lithium ion, but lithium iron batteries
I didn't know there was such a
that
thing.
really store. Yeah, most people don't. It's a lot safer than lithium ion. But I like his Powerwall 2 concepts. Once they increase the power, because you increase it, he means building the gigawatt factory in Reno or outside of Reno. It's the biggest building on Earth, 15 million square feet, and will have more battery output than all the world put together.
I know, it's incredible.
Should get going. Should get going now.
Yep.
But it's been great talking to you. Send me that information, and hopefully people got some value out of this.
Sure. Well, thanks for your time.
All right, Evan.
Take
Thanks.
care. Bye. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Joe Mercola, a true inspiration to me. I can't tell you how exciting of a day today is. We're on day two of the Adrenal Reset Summit. So if you're listening in the future, to have the summit going on, which has been an incredible event, we had over 60,000 people access the website yesterday, so much that we crashed it. We had to basically upgrade to Facebook level bandwidth and speed and memory and RAM and all of that. It's insane. To have that going on and getting to interview Mercola, which is a man who really, really, really inspired me to go as far as possible into this health space. And my grandfather even has taken a lot of steps implemented, not because I tell him, but because Mercola tells him in his newsletter. So a huge, tremendous thank you. And I'm gonna look into Florida. Don't be surprised if in 6 episodes from now you're hearing me come to you over the airwaves from Florida. If Dr. Mercola tells me to do something, I'm going to take it to heart. So, anyhow, if you're not registered for our event, go check it out. It's free for this week until November 17th. Dr. Allen and I are going to be doing a free question and answer about adrenal health. Go check it out, adrenalresetsummit.com, and you can get a free jar of coconut oil or you can get a free bottle of avocado oil through Thrive Market, who's a sponsor. You can also purchase an adrenal test kit through the summit. So all those details will be in your email once you sign up for the event, adrenalresetsummit.com. Thanks again for tuning in and thanks for being here. This is about the 4-year anniversary of this podcast. So I look forward to talking with you again soon. Take care. Bye.